Matt Bubala in for Justin Kaufman on the download on 720 WGN. Sitting here with former principal of Blaine Elementary, Troy LaRavier. Former principal of Blaine Elementary. That is official now, sir. You are now the former principal.
That is official.
You were the suspended principal.
Yes.
And now you're the former principal, at least by your own volition. You resigned. You didn't wait any longer. But you had to, I mean, you had to resign because of the new job, because you were elected as president of the Chicago Principals and Administrators Association. Whether they went after you or not, you were going to have to resign this position, correct?
I was going to have to leave the position. I was not going to have to resign it. What normally happens when, you know, like Karen Lewis, right? Mm-hmm. When she got elected as president of the teachers union, she still gets to keep her sort of a technical position within CPS so that her salary, I imagine this is how they do it. This is how CPAA once did it. So that her pension, her years and her pension continue
to grow.
And the way CPA once did it, the Principals Association once did it, is that they reimbursed CPS for the salaries of the people who are on the payroll. So the salary of the president. So the organization paid into the pension, paid the salary, but they were still technically a part of CPS so that the pension benefits and the health care and all of that could continue.
So you're still earning towards your pension, earning your years, going up the salary scale, different things like that.
Right. Well, CPS was an attempt. So in resigning, you don't get that.
So now you'll still get paid the same whatever you would have, but just CPA is
going to
pay you directly?
I actually took a pay cut to take this job. Before I even was removed.
If you weren't going to be removed as Blaine Elementary, would you have had to take a pay cut, or you would have kept your principal's salary and they just would have repaid CPS for it?
No. Taking this position was a pay cut.
Oh.
Yeah.
Big pay cut?
Hey, you know.
Pay cut's a pay cut, isn't it?
Right. And that was a lot of people on the governing board were surprised that I was willing to do it. But
yeah,
some leadership was needed.
Yeah.
And somebody had to, you know, make the sacrifice. So.
And you figure, I imagine, at least I would, that if you really want to do this, well, this is a limited time probably. I'll do this for a few years, try and change what I can, and then I can always go back to being a principal. I mean, you've got a successful track record. You're not going to get a good letter of recommendation from Rob, but I mean, you've got other people that would certainly support you, right?
I always love coming on this show.
Well, I'm sitting here reading this, and I want to work for you. I want to be your eye, and we need some advisory role. Troy, because I love a lot of this, and then I'm going to get out the red pen and go, yeah, I wouldn't say that. I don't know about this. Could we, can we do this a certain way? I feel like, you know, you're not going to like this.
Right.
You're my Donald Trump. You have ideas and things that need to be said, but you're pissing everybody off. What are you doing? Don't do that part. Come on.
My points are actually
sugar,
true, though.
Sugar, throw out the sugar.
The difference is that my points are true.
Yeah, okay. Well, you got that.
When they fact check his stuff, there's a lie every 30 seconds. You fact check my stuff and everything checks out.
Well, see, now that's what I know you're not going to say anything here tonight, but to me, I was saying on the air earlier that this 3-page resignation letter, I think some people say, well, that's his resignation letter. And some people would say that's his declaration that, Rob, I'm coming for your job.
That's the first time I've heard it put that way.
Well, I think if you read this, you could say that sounds like a man who says we could do a hell of a lot better. I'm coming for it.
I mean, technically, not necessarily me, but I mean, I campaigned for Chuy Garcia.
Right.
And so
I certainly wanted
new leadership,
yeah,
in City Hall, leadership that is going to be responsive to the needs of our schools, that is going to use evidence-based educational research to guide policy instead of using ideology. Political ideology to guide educational policy. So that's certainly something I want to see in City Hall.
With your new job, so, you know, I know, Troy, that you came to this, I believe, your position of activism here, really from a grassroots area, that you were in the trenches as a teacher and then a principal, and you see things that you just don't like, and you're like, I'm not going to stand by and just collect my paycheck and go along with this. You, as you lay out in your resignation letter, you delivered at Blaine, and that's the number one rated neighborhood school in the city, and then I believe number 3 overall rated school in the city, right?
According to Chicago Magazine.
According to Chicago Magazine.
RTI International, which is the actual organization they contracted with to do the actual
calculations. So you've got a good track record, and so you took risks and you spoke out. Whether or not we bicker about how you did it, that's for another time. But you have done that. You have spoken up. Now, since you've moved into this other position and since you've been thinking so much the last year about this, I wonder, do you know and have you looked into, were things a lot different under Mayor Daley? Are things a lot different in other big cities around America? Or is this a very common theme that in big cities, politics gets involved in education when it shouldn't be?
When there is money to be made, business corrupts politics.
Okay.
So that politics can ensure that business profits from education dollars as opposed to those dollars being spent on teachers and children and the things they've historically been spent on.
So the students and the educators have just become taxpayers in a weird way, like red light cameras and selling parking meters. Everything with education is just another thing in the city where if there's money to be made, if there's a way that this can benefit certain people, that's going to corrupt things. And it's leaked all the way into the education system. Is that fair to say?
Absolutely. Municipal government is a growth industry for hedge fund managers, bankers, and investors. They've made all the money they can on things that actually, you know, produce something. You know, the days of starting a company in an honest way and producing a product or a service and trying to make money selling that product or service are over. It's all about how you can it's about looking at, for example, CPS is a almost $6 billion enterprise. And historically, that money has been spent on the things that benefit students, you know, namely the services of competent professionals who teach them.
Yeah.
Private industry looks at that $6 billion and says, how can we get our hands on that? Just the way they looked at the money we spend on parking meters and said, how can we get our hands on that? Or the money that we spend on public transportation and said, how can we get our hands on that? So they looked at education and developed a series of political and business maneuvers that led to the situation we see today. So if we're spending money on teachers, how do we change things so that instead of spending money on teachers, we spend money on, they spend money on us, the business people?
Mm-hmm.
The first thing you have to do is make the public lose faith in what you have. And so they develop this narrative of failing schools, bad teachers, greedy teachers. Like that term is ridiculous. Greedy. Who gets into teaching to make money? Mm-hmm. Like really, who? So, but you develop this narrative that things are failing so that then you open up the public to your alternative. Right. And then your alternative are the things that are going to take public dollars away from the things you normally spend them on and send them toward the things that they can profit on, like charter schools, for example, or like the $23 million soups contract that got Barbara Bird Bennett indicted, or the $340 million Aramark and Sodexo contracts. So you build relationships with politicians who you then help get elected, and then they start to create fiscal and financial relationships with the institutions they now control that start sending that money toward them and away from students, toward them and away from teacher pensions, for example. Am I making sense here?
Yeah, you are. You are. And I think that on the other side, they would say that these are cost-saving things. We've got too many custodians. We've got too many teachers. The pension is growing too big. We can't support this forever because everybody is living way too long. Government work, I mean, if you look in the business world, there's very few businesses left that are going straight pension, right? I mean, it's a rarity. And I know that's our politicians screwing up not funding the pensions the way they should and all those things that have been done over the years. But you could also see the side where they're going to argue, listen, hey, these teachers that retire when they're 65 and now live possibly to 105, you can't afford to pay them a pension forever.
That argument would make sense if their behavior was consistent. Like if you, for example, let me say a man tells his wife,
Let me say a man tells his wife,
we don't have enough money for the things I normally, you know, buy you
right,
anymore.
Right.
You're just going to have to cut down on expenses. And then you find out later that he's buying his girlfriend a mink coat, a mink coat and a sports car. Right, so
you
the
feel
behavior
like that's
is contradictory.
What's they're not
right?
saving money. They would argue, hey, this contract saves us money. This is saving us money. We're doing better for the schools. We're providing better schools, and that's a fallacy. They're not saving money. None of it's going back where it should, and the schools are not performing better like they're trying to promise.
So
right?
I believe in evidence, and so let's look at the evidence. So, for example, while they were not paying into teacher pensions, they were taking that money and going on a school building spree, expanding, building charters, building selective enrollment, spending hundreds of millions. Even today, they have proposals to build three new schools. You build competent fiscal management means you build new schools when you get more students.
Right.
That's just competent,
right. Sure.
Responsible fiscal management. If your student population is not growing, you do not build more schools. You don't build schools as an education reform strategy. This district built 40% more schools when it only has 2% more students. That is a waste of hundreds of, and they still have plans to build more, and now the student enrollment is actually declining.
And we've actually closed down a bunch of schools, haven't
exactly,
we?
Because they're saying they're underutilized. You're creating the underutilization when you build more schools, and not only are you creating it, you're wasting hundreds of millions of taxpayer dollars in the process. But who benefits from that? Do you know that there's a federal government program that allows banks to double their profits by investing in the building of new schools? What a coincidence, right? And so while they're pleading poverty to teachers and saying that they can't fund their pensions, over the last, where has that pension money been spent? On the building of these new schools, on the expansion of charters, on these corrupt contracts. And so when they say, teachers, you're going to have to sacrifice, right? We're going to have to sacrifice your pension. Like when the taxpayer gets that bill, when that property tax bill, that bill is not going to be to pay. Let's go back to the husband-wife example.
Okay.
Let's say the husband spends the mortgage money on the mistress's fur coat and sports car.
Right.
And now the wife is, so you have to work extra hard to pay our mortgage. You have to work overtime to pay the mortgage. And the wife works overtime, but she's not working overtime to pay the mortgage. She's working overtime to pay for that fur coat and that sports car. And so when the taxpayers get that property tax bill, you're not paying for teacher pensions. You're paying for what they wasted the teacher pension money on in the first place, which are these corrupt contracts and this ridiculous school expansion spree in a district that is not expanding students.
You're paying for the mismanagement over the last number of years.
And ultimately, you're paying for your own poor choices at the ballot box. Teachers didn't make these poor decisions. We did. And we're paying for our lack of investment and involvement in the political process. We put the people in office that misspent that money. And so now we are going to have to pay. And hopefully when we get that property tax bill, it will be at a serious reminder to us that we need to pay close attention to the political process and put people in office that are going to be fiscally responsible with our tax dollars.
Troy LaRavier is in studio, 312-981-7200. We'll talk more about what's going on with the teachers and his own future next on 720 WGN. The Download with Justin Kaufman on a Wednesday night. Matt Bubala filling in until 11 o'clock. Coming up after the 8 o'clock news, we'll see if it starts right on time or not. Rob will jump to Donald Trump's big immigration speech in Phoenix as soon as it hits live. Troy LaRavier is in studio. You were a delegate, an Illinois delegate for Bernie Sanders.
Yes, I was.
And so you attended the convention?
I did.
How was that? Just as an event, though, I imagine your first time at a Democratic National Convention, right?
It was my first time. There was a lot of spectacle.
Is it pretty cool overall? I mean, is it like take away the politics or whatever? And I know you're very involved, but you just get there and it's a stadium full of people talking politics. Was that like, that's pretty cool? This is America, or because you were a Bernie supporter and it wasn't going to be his time, was it kind of frustrating? Or
there was that undercurrent. You know, you're part of a delegation of people that have been working for a particular set of issues, not just Bernie, but the issues that Bernie carried, that the campaign carried. And you know now that the winning side is not going to champion those issues. And so there was a lot of talk of, you know, voting for third party candidates, Jill Stein, Bernie or bust kind of conversation, right, particularly from the California delegation. And Illinois was right next. The California delegation was in the stands, and we were on the floor right next to them. And they put up so much noise. I mean, they booed. It was like coordinated. The Bernie part of the California delegation.
Yeah.
You know, California is the largest delegation.
Yeah.
They were not happy. And so you had that dynamic. And the Illinois delegation was not as Bernie or bust as the California delegation was. So you had a lot of moments where the Clintonites in the audience, I don't know if you, there would be certain, there would be times when you would hear certain chants on TV.
Yeah.
They were drowning out the California delegation and the other various members of the Bernie or bust campaign when they started certain chants when Hillary or somebody was speaking. And so it was an interesting thing to be a part of. One of the best parts of it for me, besides the convention itself, was the fact that, you know, you're there as a delegation. And so in the morning, there are these formal programs for your delegation. You get together, you eat breakfast, you assemble in this big room. There's a speech from some of the, you know, high-profile politicians from in Illinois. But mostly you're standing around talking and eating and talking in the morning. And so you get to, and most of your delegation consists of all of the politicals and the elected officials in Illinois. And so it's this great opportunity to build relationships and have conversations with the people who determine policy in your state and in your city. And so I took full advantage of that. And then at night, after the convention, 11 o'clock, those same people are at the hotel bar until like 3 a.m. And it was so cool to sit there with your state representatives and getting to know those cats at 3 a.m. at the hotel bar, you know, just like as person to person, having conversations about life and conversations about politics and, you know, what our agenda is as an organization. Yeah. You know, I pushed, you know, the Principals Association agenda quite a bit. I talked it up and what our concerns are. So that was that outside of the convention itself.
Yeah.
And you have that for four nights in a row.
Yeah.
And four mornings in a row. That was a great process to be a part of.
That's really cool. All right. Troy LaRavier is here. We got to take a quick break, hit the news, and then we'll see if Donald Trump takes the stage. You're going to stick around. You're going to listen to Donald Trump's speech. You're going to help offer some commentary afterwards. How about that?
Have anything of substance to say.
You're never at a loss for words, my friend. We'll take a quick break and lots more to do here on 720 WGN.